Welcome back to Uniquely Genetics, a podcast by Sheep Genetics. I'm Chloe Bunter, and today for our seventh episode, we're embracing the sale season that is well and truly upon us. All across the country, rams are up for sale, catalogues are going to the printer, pen cards are being made, and you are trying to buckle down your strategy for selecting the next generation of genetics to bring back to your flock. Over the series of the podcast, you would be hard-pressed to find an episode that hasn't mentioned ASBVs, Australian Sheep Breeding Values. It's sort of the main thing we do here at Sheep Genetics. So it's about time that we dedicate some space and delve into this pretty awesome, pretty important value. I thought who better to go through the details and intricacies of what an ASBV is than someone who lives and breeds them every day like me. Over the last 18 months, she's been helping breeders and flocks across Australia gain a better understanding of their data, interpreting breeding values, and worked on some really cool resources to make it more accessible and available to a wider industry and different levels of understanding. Joining me today is fellow development officer, Kate Rummery. So Kate, you've been part of the Sheep Genetics team for about 18 months now in the development officer role. What has been your pathway into this role and what drew you to join Sheep Genetics in the first place?
Yeah, I grew up on a commercial superfine merino sheep and cattle property in the New England region of New South Wales. And I guess from that, I've always had a bit of a passion for the ag industry and in particular genetics. I always was very involved in the selection process at home in selecting rams, mm-hmm. but also bulls back in the very early days. And I guess we used ASBVs on our property at home, so that was a really good lead in for me. But after finishing school up here in the New England, I headed down to uni in Wagga at CSU Wagga, and I did a Bachelor of Animal Science there. And that again was a bit more of a feed into sort of to the ag industry for me and in particular animal production. After uni, I took a bit of a break. I had a year off traveling Australia before I guess I came home and I looked for a job in ag and animal production. At this point, I really didn't have any clue what I wanted to do. I just wanted a job, any kind of lead into the industry, as you do when you sort of leave uni. But as it happens, I was attending our annual ram sale where we buy our rams, and I was chatting to Beck Onslow there, and she works up at AgBoo, who support, I guess, the Sheep Genetics evaluation, and she told me there was a job opening in the Sheep Genetics team, and I thought, oh, I better apply for that. And I guess on Monday morning, I went to apply for it, found out the job had already closed and there was no longer applications open, which was a bit of a shock. I had to ring up and I guess plead that they would accept my resume, which they did. And then, yeah, the general interview process.
Over the course of the last six episodes within the podcast, the word ASBV or Australian Sheep Breeding Value has been thrown around and used quite a lot. It is really the crux and pretty integral of what we do. If you had to explain in more detail what an ASBV is and why people should care about them, what would you say?
Yeah, so as you said, an ASBV, it stands for Australian Sheep Breeding Value, and essentially it's a figure that represents the genetic merit an animal possesses and what they'll pass on to their progeny, and we, I guess, calculate this for over 100 traits, so there's lots and lots of different traits that we create this breeding value for, and it means that people can make informed selection decisions towards a breeding objective or an actual goal. I guess as part of that, Sheep Genetics runs a couple of different analyses. So there's the Merino Select analysis, there's the Lamb Plan analyses, of which there's two that fall under that, so terminals and maternals. There's also a Kid Plan evaluation and a Dooney evaluation. So animals within each of these analyses can be compared to each other. So that's across flocks and across environments, but also across breeds in some of them. So for example, White Suffolks, Pole Dorsets, Texels are all comparable as they're all terminal animals. And then things like Borders, Corridales and composite maternals, they all fall into the maternal analysis and are fully comparable across those breeds. This is quite an advantage in sheep breeding. So essentially we can take advantage of heterosis or hybrid vigour essentially, and allow for crossbreeding within commercial properties.
So to be able to do that across flock evaluation, as you said, across Merino Select, Lamb Plan, Kid Plan, and the Dooney analysis, how is an ASBV actually calculated? Like, what types of information go into it, and how do we end up with that figure result?
That's a really tricky question to answer, Chloe. But essentially, Sheep Genetics uses lots and lots of different pieces of data and information that's submitted or supplied by studs and breeders. And we use a whole combination of data to calculate breeding values. So some of the things that we're trying to capture is the animal itself and its information. So birth type and rear types, that's how many animals were born in the litter and then how many were reared from that litter. And we can make adjustments based on that. Also their date of birth and their sex. That sort of information allows us to adjust breeding values and I guess more accurately group animals based on their, you know, sort of fundamental things that have an impact on their performance that aren't necessarily genetic. And we call them often fixed effects. And then we use sibling information. So we're using siblings as contemporary groups. So animals have to be compared to other animals and they sit within a, what we call a contemporary group. So within this contemporary group, we can directly make comparisons between animals because they've grown up in the same environment, they're the same sex and so forth. We also use sire and dam information to calculate breeding values. So we have information on both sire and dam, and we, I guess, average that into what we call a mid-parent breeding value and use that as some information for this for the progeny's breeding value. And then one of the bits of information that I guess most people would sort of know about and think about is the actual trait measurements. So our breeders, our stud breeders go out and collect things like live weights, fat and muscle scans, wool measurements, things like that, and that will contribute. Then we also have the environment, heritability and correlations to other traits. And then a bit of the icing on the cake is genomics. So we have, I guess, a genomic evaluation that can use DNA information to create better accuracy in our breeding values.
Using all of that different types of information, so from the fixed effects, like you said, through to the trait measurement, through to sire and dam information and the environment, what happens if we're missing a part of that information? So what happens if, for example, we don't know the dam or if we're missing that particular trait being measured?
We still try and create a breeding value. So all breeding values have an accuracy threshold and they won't be reported unless they meet that accuracy threshold. But depending on the trait, different pieces of information can be used. So we'll have correlated traits. So let's say you've taken a weaning weight, but you haven't taken a post-weaning weight. We'll still be able to produce a post-weaning weight breeding value using the correlation from a weaning weight breeding value. And I guess the same with our pedigree information. If we're missing dam pedigree, we can, I guess, estimate what the dam pedigree will have been from something like a genetic group. We sort of try and fill in the gaps as best we can, but obviously the better quality data provided, the more accurate the breeding value that we can create is.
If all of this effort is taken to collect all this data, capture all this information and have it identifying the genetic potential of these animals, who gets to benefit from that? Who can use ASBVs?
So it's used by both seed stock and commercial sheep producers. So seed stock breeders sort of can use this to make genetic gain. They can make selection decisions based on actual individual animals. They have females and males that will have breeding values that they can make selection decisions around. And that really drives genetic gain in our industry. And then commercial producers go and buy rams at sales that have breeding values and make informed selection decisions at that point. And they sort of piggyback off the efforts and the data collection and recording of their seed stock studs.
Yes, you're right. That commercial industry and using it in selection really does piggyback off the work of our seed stock producers. And Clara spoke a little bit about that in her episode when we were talking about that tiered structure of the industry from nucleus down to multipliers down to the commercial industry. So it's good to see all of that linked back. When it comes to creating an ASBV, you've alluded to before that they are run through an evaluation. Can you give us a little bit more information about that process and how they go about the calculation?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we say evaluation, essentially it's a big computer that has a big script in there that is essentially one big calculation that creates breeding values. And we that's what we call a run. So we run the data through this big evaluation that calculates breeding values. And Sheep Genetics recalculates or reruns all of the data every 2 weeks. So for merinos, that's done on the 7th and 21st of each month. And for lamb plan and kid plan, it's done on the 1st and 15th of each month. So essentially that process is the recalculation of every single breeding value. We include the new information that's been submitted since last time, and we recalculate every single breeding value for every single animal that's ever been submitted to Sheep Genetics every 2 weeks. And that takes a really long time. So for example, in Merino Select, it's a really big data set, and it takes approximately 6 days for that calculation process to happen. And sometimes if there's problems, it can really blow out to sort of 10 days to get that to run through the computer, which is just because it's such a massive data set and so many genotypes included in that analysis too.
So with those runs every 2 weeks, the website really is displaying the most up-to-date data at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what we're doing. So data is essentially always up-to-date, no more than 2 weeks old.
What types of traits or what types of things can producers expect to look for or be able to have ASBVs available?
There's five main trait groups that we report on. So the groups are weights, so live weights. There's carcass traits, wool traits, reproduction traits, and then our health and welfare traits. But under these, we have specific age stages that they can each be measured at. So for example, for a live weight, that can be taken at birth, weaning, post-weaning, yearling, hogget, and then also adult. So that counts sort of for, I guess, six or seven traits. It's not just one trait, but other traits can only be taken at specific age stages and aren't so, I guess, diverse across them. For instance, reproduction, we only take it a yearling and an adult age stage. We obviously don't have weaning information on conception or something like that.
Are there any traits on the horizon that you could see coming online over the next couple of years outside of the ones that we know and love, like weights or fat and muscle and fleece weights and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure Sarah and Clara would have both spoken about this to some extent, but our research pipeline feeds essentially straight into Sheep Genetics. So every time there's a trait being researched, we can implement that in Sheep Genetics. And I guess coming up in the near future will be shedding trait. Yep. So there's a project underway at the moment that's capturing shedding and its variation across the year, with the aim to release a research breeding value for that in the next probably year, and then a real ASBV when we get a larger data set. So another one will be methane in the near future. So we'll be able to create a breeding value or an index even for methane and feed efficiency, making sure that we're producing low methane animals that are still really high production animals.
Another commonly used phrase in conjunction to ASBVs when we're talking about genetics and genetic selection is indexes. Are you able to give us an explanation on what they are?
Yeah. So an index is a figure that combines a couple of different traits into just the one figure. It makes for really easy select decisions. So essentially we put in traits that are economically relevant or socially relevant that represent production systems and I guess boil that down to just one figure that can be selected on. In industry, I guess it's used largely as probably a drafting gate. So producers can rank animals just based on this one number, and we know we have sort of the best ones at the top. But then you sort of look through their individual ASBVs and make sure that each trait is what you actually want, and they're not achieving, say, a high index through traits that aren't important to your breeding objective.
Because you can achieve a similar index value based on a couple of different traits, but could be lacking in others, is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. An analogy that we use quite often when we're trying to present this data is the cereal analogy. So when you go to Woolies or Coles or whatever your local shopping sort of centre is, you'll see, I guess, cereals, but all range of foods with a health star rating. And that health star rating is essentially an index. So on the back of the box, you'll have the nutritional information and they can be sort of compared to an ASBV. But then on the front, they'll just have the big, this is a 5 out of 5 health star rating. And that can be, I guess, essentially the same as an index.
It's a really good practical application that indexes aren't just, I guess, special to genetics. They are used every day in life. We've alluded to it before, but I really want to delve into the concept of an across-flock evaluation a little bit more. So being able to compare these animals and use them for selection decisions, it is a vital part of genetic selection and what sheep genetics is all about. Are you able to provide a little bit more detail and explain what the different components that allow us to do across-flock is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think probably the one that is probably most important is linkage. So it's genetic linkage. So essentially, we use what we call a link sire as a benchmark to compare other sires with. So we're looking at their progeny performance in the same environment. I guess a practical example of this one, and it's quite hard to explain when you're not using visuals, but if we have a race. And we have runner A and runner B racing, and runner A wins. Then, in a totally different day, different environment, we have runner B versus runner C, and runner B wins that one. We've never compared runner A to runner C. They've never run together in the same race, but we know via our benchmark or our link sire, sire B or runner B, that A is going to beat C. We know that he's faster. And that's
That's the great example with the Olympics just being on.
that's essentially exactly what linkage does. It allows us to use a benchmark sire or a link sire that's been used in a lot of different environments to compare the performance of animals that haven't necessarily ever been head to head directly compared or run in the same environment. Probably the next bit of comparing animals across environments and across flocks is management groups. So management groups are provided by breeders in their data file that they send to us with every single measurement that they take. So for example, from birth to weaning, a producer may be running two different mobs. One of them's out on pasture and the other's in a drought lot. These animals, we sort of know intuitively should not be directly compared for their weaning weight. They've run in totally different environments. They've had different nutritional availability, and we just know that they should not be directly compared. So the breeder would, in that case, supply two different management groups: group one for those that have been run on pasture, and group two for those run in a drought lot. And that essentially tells us in the analysis that those two groups of animals should never be compared. They've had a very different upbringing, and they will not be directly head-to-head compared in the analysis. So essentially, what that allows us to do is it removes environmental impact from our performance. So we can compare animals that have been run in the same environment, had the same availability, and we can make head-to-head comparisons between them and know that it's a fair comparison. It essentially removes our environmental noise when we're creating a breeding value based only on genetic.
Linkage and management groups are great ways for us to receive the data that sort of accounted for those environmental differences in that across flock comparison. Is there some way when we're making selection decisions that we can take advantage of this across flock comparison?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say when people are making selection decisions based on breeding values, they should always have open the percentile bands. So the percentile bands are essentially a report we generate and recalculate every 2 weeks with the runs, and they explain where an ASBV figure sits within industry. So, for example, a P weight of 12, that will mean not a lot to most people. What does that sort of give us in terms of information? Not a lot. But when we look at it compared to the percentile bands, it tells us quite a lot, really. So the percentile bands will show us where the top 5%, top 10, 20, and so forth, right down to the 90th percentile sits, and what ASBV figure is associated with it. So a P weight of 12, we can then look at the percentile bands and know that the top 5% of industries are at roughly 18, and the bottom 10% below 10. And a 12 happens to fall in the 80th percentile. So we actually know that that animal with a 12 P weight is not necessarily a very quick grower compared to the rest of industry, and there's definitely animals that will grow quicker that we could select for.
So the percentiles are a great way if you have a breeding objective in mind and you're looking at a sale catalogue to make those more accurate selection decisions.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Chloe.
It is currently sale season. People are quickly trying to either brush up on their previous knowledge or learn what an ASBV is as fast as they can. Do you have any advice for our producers looking at the sale catalogues and the pen cards this year?
Yeah, of course. So when you're going to sales as a commercial or even a seed stock producer, it can be pretty overwhelming. There'll be a lot of information on the pen cards, and some of it will be what we call raw data. So there'll be the actual on-farm measurements, and some of it will be ASBVs. So it's really good to get clear in your mind and differentiate what is what, and make sure that you know what information you're reading off a pen card or out of a sale catalogue. Most of the time, an ASBV will have an accuracy figure associated with it and also some kind of percentile band highlighting, if possible. Sheep Genetics uses specific colours for highlighting different percentile bands. So purple's the top 5%, blue is the top 10%, and green is the top 20%. But this isn't always standard across pen cards. So just make sure you're reading the key in these sale catalogues or pen cards and make sure you know what you're looking at. The other thing to pay attention to is the analysis date that's provided with it. So this is the analysis date that data was run. Just make sure it's relatively recent and it's not from 3 years ago or something like that. We want to see it probably within the last 2 months of that sale date. The other thing that you can do is to brush up on your knowledge. There's lots and lots of resources out there that Sheep Genetics and MLA provide in terms of understanding breeding values and knowing what to look at going into sale season. So there's some e-learnings and some videos on YouTube that you can search up and brush up on your knowledge through those resources. Animals that have ASBVs should be available on the Sheep Genetics website. So they'll have a 16-digit ID that you can search in Sheep Genetics and you'll be able to see their most up-to-date breeding values. And that's also just a good place to look for traits that maybe haven't been provided in the sale catalogue, for traits that are specific to your breeding objective.
Well, thank you so much, Kate. There is some great knowledge and information there for people who are looking to make genetic selection decisions this year when they're purchasing rams and going through their flocks. I have one final question for you. You have been in the Sheep Genetics team now for 18 months as the development officer, as we said. What have been some of the highlights during your time here or some of the interesting aspects of your work that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic question. I think probably one of my favourite parts of this job is building relationships with our clients. So we work, Chloe and I both work really closely with the seed stock producers as submitting data to Sheep Genetics, and we're always on the phone or typing up an email to them. And it's just really lovely to get to know some people that obviously I haven't known previously. I'd also say, obviously, a really exciting part of this job is the events and the travel to events. So we attend some really really fun events like Bendigo Sheep Show and Hamilton Sheepvention. They're always fun. I get to eat a lot of jam donuts, which I personally love. But also there's some really good academic events. I went to Triple ABG last year, which is a conference for sort of academics in the animal breeding and genetics sort of area or field. And it was just fascinating hearing all these scientists sort of explain their papers and what research they've been doing in the last sort of couple of years. Final one from me would be the e-learning. So we have an e-learning for new members to Sheep Genetics and for returning members, I guess, for anyone in Sheep Genetics. And it explains all aspects of data recording and linkage and management groups and the things that we've sort of spoken about today. And I took a couple of months out really at the end of last year to rewrite it completely. Yeah. And I'd say I'm really happy with it. I think it's a really good resource. I've had no negative feedback so far.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today, Kate.
No problems at all, Chloe. It was really, really lovely to talk to you.